Interlude. Tatooine. It is a difficult thing being a creature without purpose. The purpose of the man, Malakili, was once to give purpose to such creatures. He was always good with beasts. As a child in a Nar Shaddaa slum, he taught vicious gug worms to stop stealing from the food stores, and over time they became his pets, his friends, his protectors. Later, he would help tame and prepare a variety of beasts for the hut circuses. Sand dragons and killwings and little womp rats in their little outfits. And then later, his precious joy, the rancors. Those, the monsters none could tame but he.
And now, his last rancor, Patissa, is dead. Crushed by a lucky fool in black. Worse, his employer is also gone. Eradicated by that same lucky fool and his cruel friends.
Malakili and the others were left in the palace after Jabba's sail barge erupted in belching fire. All of them unsure as to what exactly to do now. A new hut would come to occupy the dais, they said. And so many stayed as the food dwindled and the water ran out. Soon those left began drifting away too, off into the sands and away across the dunes. No hut was coming. The galaxy was changing. Could it be that the huts were fighting? Some underworld war pitting slug against slug? Malakili was one of the last in the palace. And then one day, he left too. He thought maybe to tame the glorious monstrosity at the bottom of the great pit of Carcoon, and failing that, to throw himself into its maw. But the mighty Sarlacc was injured. Burning wreckage from the sail barge had rained upon it. Already its body, considerably more massive than the mouth exposed from the sliding sands, had been partially unburied. Its stomach tube slit open, its digesting innards pillaged by industrious Jawas. They pulled out weapons and armor, droids and tools, and skeletons, of course. The creature of Carcoon had a pure purpose, to wait and to eat. And now it was left to thrash and wail in the grip of pillagers. Malakili wept at another life without purpose.
He wandered, as many do. He felt like a scrap of cloth or a wad of trash blown across the desert, pushed this way and pulled that way, rolling without destination, without meaning. And now he thinks,
I am going to die.
The Red Key thugs found him wandering toward Mos Pelgo. They gave chase, but he is older and slower than he used to be. One hit him from behind, and now his face is pressed into the hot sand. A boot pushes on his neck, and the bones in his back grind. One of the Red Key raiders, men who claim to work for the new mining conglomerate, a conglomerate even naive Malakili knows to be just a front for a criminal syndicate, rips off his leather hood and presses a blaster into the back of his skull. They rip his satchel from his shoulder and empty it onto the sand. His waterskin finds its way into one of the thug's hands, who parts the leather from in front of his face and drinks what little is left. The rest of Malakili's belongings decorate the dirt. A lucky braid of bantha fur and teeth, a small water shiv made of dewback bone, a few droid gears and shiny chits to give to the Jawas or to pay off the grunting Tuskens. A man who introduces himself as Bivum Gorge rasps in Malakili's ear.
What else you got, Wanderer? These sands are Red Key sands, and Lorgan Morvelin is taking his cut. Wouldn't want his cut to be your ears or your tongue, would you?
The second thug chuckles through a respirator. As if to demonstrate, the first thug stabs a gleaming hunting knife down into the ground. It hits the sand with a hiss. Above them, the shriek of a blaster bolt. And then, the thug hits the sand too. He topples like a vaporator knocked flat by a stomping bantha. His head turns toward Malakili as smoke rises from a patch of burned hair and skin on the far side of his skull. The thug's mouth works soundlessly. Then his eyes go dim. Suddenly, the air erupts with blaster fire. The second thug gargles rage through his respirator, but even this is short-lived. He staggers backward, arms flailing, the rifle dropping out of his hand. That thug joins his friend. The Suns will claim him. Malakili does not move. Whoever is coming is worse than these two, and so it seems better to play dead. That, a trick he learned from many of the beasts he trained. Prey knows that the best costume from a predator is the already dead.
Please let me be. Please let me be. Please.
But why? To what purpose? To be saved? To be spared? Is a privilege that should belong to one with purpose. Footsteps approach, boots thumping on the sand.
You can get up.
A voice, male, gruff, plain, clear. Another voice, a woman's voice.
Relax. We're not raiders.
We're law.
Law? On Tatooine? No such thing. The Hutts were the law. Jabba was law. But now, with Jabba dead... Malakili rolls over and sits up. There, a man in Mandalorian armor. The suit of it pocked and pitted and streaked with scars. Armor that looks eerily familiar, and Malakili's innards clench at the sight of it. A carbine hangs at the man's side. Next to him stands a tall woman. Headtails, which means she's Twi'lek, though one of those headtails is mangled, its ends puckered with scar tissue. At her hips hang twin pistols.
I'm Issa Orr,
she says, a sneer to her lips. The man removes his helmet. His cheeks are lined with salt and pepper stubble. He winces against the double suns.
I'm Cobb Vance, lawman and de facto mayor of what used to be Mos Pelgo.
Freetown now, the Twi'lek says. A place where good people can come if they're willing to work. If they're willing to stand tall against the syndicates. Against folks like Lorgan and Redki.
Malakili nods as if he understands, but he does not. Not yet. Cobb kneels down.
You look familiar to me.
I am no one.
Everybody's someone, my friend. Thing about Freetown is, to live inside our walls means to be useful. Are you useful?
And here, Malakili's spirits sink. He is not useful to anyone. He admits as such, his dry eyes going suddenly wet with tears.
I have no value to you. Kill me. My creature Patissa is dead. All my beasts are gone.
The Twi'lek says,
You a beastmaster?
Master. If only he deserved such a word. But he gives an uncertain nod.
I train beasts, yes.
The two share a look. Vanth chuckles, a dry sound like rocks rolling together down the side of a cliff.
We got a couple of unruly Rontos that could use a steady hand. Can you handle that? There'd be payment, and a homestead for you if you care to claim it.
His sinking spirits are suddenly buoyant. Purpose dawns inside his heart, bringing light to darkness once more.
I can.
There's something else,
Issa Orr says.
Should we tell him?
Why not? If anybody can help.
Cobb leans in close, and as he helps Malakili up, the man says in a low voice, as if the sand might be listening.
You know much about huts.
I know quite a bit.
You think you could train one?
Why, they are sentient beings, not pets.
Fine. Teach one, then?
I could, I believe. But why?
Issa Orr grins.
Because we have one. At Freetown.
A baby,
Cobb says, scratching his jaw.
Seems that Red Key was trying to sneak one in. Install it onto the palace dais. We interrupted that little plan, and now we got this slug, and not sure what to do with it. If you can help us with the Rontos, maybe the hut, you got a place of Freetown. How's that sound, friend?
It sounds
like purpose.
Most excellent. Thank you.
You can thank me by doing your job.
Let's go, Issa Orr says. Leave the corpses for the others to find. Let them see that law, true law, is spreading across the land.